Support for the Projection Booth podcast comes from Stitcher Smart Radio. Now podcast listeners can access the latest episodes of the Projection Booth and thousands of other podcasts on the go without downloading or syncing. Stitcher instantly delivers episodes of your favorite shows to your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio can be found in the iPhone and Android app stores or on the web at stitcher.com/booth.
I've been directing 10-cent movies for 30 years, and I think I know a little bit about what I'm doing. It's a horrible world. There's starvation, dismemberment, torture, rape, cornholing. It's horrible out there. But it's worse. It's worse here in the movie set. It's much worse. We have danger and stupidity. I don't want somebody dying on my set. If someone dies here, I'll blow my brains out. It'll be your fault. My career will be over. It'll be your fault. Now, where are them big-titted women at?
Oh, God!
Terror Burmer.
What we got here is your basic serial killer.
You know, your killer's choices of victims indicate some sort of personal animosity against you and your company.
Family values must be saved.
Yeah, right.
Where's the blood? Where's the blood? Where's the blood?
Run for your lives! There's a killer on the movie set!
Oh my God! We're done! We're done! No! This is a trauma movie!
That guy is really dead!
What's that?
These movie people are disgusting!
Terror Burmer!
Don't give up the fight for truly independent cinema!
Inspired by Lloyd Kaufman's book, All I Need to Know About Filmmaking, I Learned from the Toxic Avenger. Available at fine bookstores everywhere. From Troma, of course.
Welcome to the Projection Booth. I'm Rob St. Mary, and of course, joining me is co-host Mr. Mike White.
Fights, camera, fart noises.
There you go. That's right. We're talking about Terror Firmer, the 1999 film from director Lloyd Kaufman, the creator of The Toxic Avenger and co-founder of New York's cult movie factory, Troma, is back with probably his most personal film in a way. Kaufman not only directs but stars in Terror Firmer as Larry Benjamin, a low-budget filmmaker trying to create his latest masterpiece of art. When a serial killer starts bumping off crew members and the cast, the film is loosely tied to Kaufman's 1998 memoir, called All I Need to Know About Filmmaking, I Learned from the Toxic Avenger. Terror Firmer stars Will Keenan as Casey, the sound man who loves Hollywood films, Elise LaTourelle as Jennifer, crew member who has a romance with Casey, and at the same time, sort of a love triangle interest in his first role, Trent Haga as Jerry, a gorehound horror movie film freak who's very funny and manic in this first role, the first time he's been on screen. Terror Firmer also features many cameos from people you might know, such as filmmaker Eli Roth, author Anthony Hayden Guest, that's right, that's the brother of Christopher Hayden Guest, Trey Parker, Matt Stone of South Park fame, and the great Shakespearean actor Ron Jeremy, and God, of course, better known by his earthly name as Lemmy from Motorhead. Now, Mike, I've got some great personal stories when it comes to Terror Firmer that I'd like to share later on, but just wanted to get your take on watching this third showcased film that we've dedicated to what I would consider many key films of director Lloyd Kaufman.
Yeah, Terror Firmer. This was a tough watch. Again, I think it starts off a little slow and then kind of picks up as we go along. There was one point where I looked down at the clock and I was like, it was probably an hour and a half into it, and I saw that I still had probably another 20 some minutes to go, and I was like, my God, how are they going to make this thing last another 20 minutes? But I enjoyed parts of it. Again, I think, you know, they could have cut out some stuff, and I don't know. I guess you're starting to turn me into something of, I won't say a tromaholic, but definitely I'm starting to appreciate these films. But I'm still having problems with some of the things, like the fart noises and the excessive gore and just that kind of like over the top performance kind of stuff. I mean, Trent Haga, I appreciated him in this. I liked him more than Jamie Gunn's brother from Romeo and Juliet. But there were times where it was just like, oh my God, you know, calm down a little bit, because everyone turns it up to 11 when they're performing in a trauma movie.
I will say that there's a couple of reasons. We'll get into this as to why it is so manic like that. Well, the first thing is that always remember that I think probably the motto, and maybe Lloyd would agree with me on this, is that nothing succeeds like excess when it comes to trauma. That it's like, if you can dial it up to 12, because 11 just ain't enough. And the other thing you also want to consider when you're talking about trauma movies is it's right on the back of Lloyd's book, All I Need to Know About Filmmaking and Learn from the Toxic Avenger. There's a quote from Lloyd himself, and it says, quote, "When watching a trauma movie, you must not only suspend your disbelief, you must lock it up in a small iron crate and torture it." So I think that's what you're talking about, good sir.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah, there were times in this film where, yeah, it was just like, really? This is happening on screen right now. This is where we're going with this. But I tried to sit back and accept it. I think that the other thing that you need when it comes to trauma watching is some sort of substance abuse. I think that would probably be something to help me out when it comes to the next one. So I don't know if you're going to poltergeist me one of these days or something else, but yeah, this is I think had I had a couple in me, I would have enjoyed this one a little bit more.
You know, that's the great thing about trauma films, at least from my aspect, is that they're usually crowd film. It's not something you want to watch by yourself in a room. It's usually good to get a bunch of people together. And as you said, maybe imbibe a few substances. Although I have to say that I have watched Terra Firma with a crowd, and I've also watched it solo, and I do have more fun with Lloyd's films in a crowd than I do by myself. As for the title itself, this is the thing where I love Lloyd, because Lloyd is not a stupid man. He's Yale educated and was actually in the same class as George W. Bush, and we won't hold that against him. But the title, do you know what the title, Terra Firma, where that's supposed to come from?
I imagine we're playing off of terra firma.
It's supposed to be solid ground from Latin. Yes, that's correct. So it's just, you know, this whole thing. I mean, like, why would you name a horror film after an obscure Latin phrase? I mean, do you think the average trauma fan even knows what terra firma means?
I wouldn't sell short any trauma fans, especially ones that are listening right now, because we love you.
That's right. We're going to get hate mail if we go into it too. Well, I think I kind of encapsulated the plot in the opening, kind of explaining that, you know, Lloyd plays the character. He's a blind film director who's trying to make the next trauma film. And trauma's all over the place. There's trauma posters. There's trauma this, trauma that. There's even a plug for the trauma website in the film. There's other trauma movies and all this stuff. And it's just serial killer on the movie set. And they just start picking them off in really creative, interesting, overly gory, and trauma-esque ways. Because that's really the only way you can say it. You know, much like Python-esque, there's such a thing as trauma-esque. And for me, I think it's sort of a treat to the fans. But, you know, you haven't really been steeped in the universe as much as I have. And just wanted your take on, you know, do you think this is more of a fan film than something that could be an entry point for people?
I think definitely having a background in trauma would make one appreciate this a little bit more, especially, you know, we've got familiar characters. We've got Sergeant Kabuki Man hanging out. We've got the Toxic Avenger. We even have Trent Haga playing the Toxic Avenger at one point. So it's kind of like, you know, all those guys that play Jason that can show up to the conventions and be like, hey, I play Jason in, you know, number 4. And then, you know, you get all those guys' autographs and stuff. So now you have to get Trent Haga's autograph when you're looking for Toxie, you know, paraphernalia. But yeah, I think you would definitely appreciate it more, not just knowing some of the films that they're talking about and some of the characters that they're using, but just also having that aesthetic firmly in place while you're watching this. I think coming in cold might leave you a little bit more confused than normal.
why Terra Firma kind of works for me is that I like the fact that it kind of plays in a dual space, because I feel that Lloyd is not only creating a trauma film, but he's almost satirizing himself at the same time, because there are all these sort of like backhanded jokes back at trauma. And I think that's kind of interesting that he's not only creating a trauma film, but he's also saying, really? At the same time to himself.
Can you just tell me when the life-affirming rape scene is?
Tomorrow, between the double leg amputation and the Cuisinart circumcision.
Life-affirming rape scene? How are they going to do that?
It reminded me a little of like Hollywood Boulevard, where it's like, you know, miracle pictures. If it's a good picture, it's a miracle kind of thing.
Glad that wasn't a real knife.
Come on, of course it wasn't. We wouldn't even allow a butter knife on a set. You know Benjamin's three rules of safety. One, safety to humans. Two, safety to people's property. And three, make a good movie.
Yeah, too bad he can't seem to get rule three right.
And just, you know, that whole parroting of Roger Corman. I don't think Roger's ever really, you know, put himself out there and parodied himself. So I really think that it took a lot for Lloyd to put himself there. And really, he just, you know, I know that Lloyd is shameless. You know, I've seen him in person. I've seen him plug stuff, you know, all the live long day. So he's definitely, you know, out there selling and that kind of stuff. And he knows what he's got. He knows what kind of product he makes. But I think putting himself in that role of the blind director, you know, it was clever and it worked. And I was really glad to see him. And I actually thought he was one of the best actors that was on screen.
We didn't get much out of your crew, so that really just leaves you, Benjamin.
Well, I'm working on a theory, officer. You see, it's the right-wing conspiracy. What they do is they get people to dress up as the Toxic Avenger and come and sabotage movie sets. They do things like that. Hillary Clinton knows all about...
Officer, you just bitch-slapped a blind guy. Let me ask you something, Benjamin. How is it you didn't know that this fat fuck Gelman got eaten by an escalator?
Look, officer, perhaps you haven't noticed, but I'm blind. I haven't read a newspaper in a very long time.
Now you can whack him.
Except for Will Keenan and Ron Jeremy, I thought that... you know, Lloyd was where it was at when it came to this film and the actors in the film.
Yep, Andy, I've been doing a lot of thinking. And in spite of all the horrible things that have happened on this production, we've got to march forward and continue it.
You're right, Larry.
We've got a responsibility to the young people all over the world for these important social statements that they're waiting for.
Right, Larry.
And we're the torchbearers for independent filmmakers everywhere.
You're right, Larry.
Now, where are them big-titted women at?
Yeah! And really, every time he was on screen, I liked the movie more than when he wasn't.
For me, knowing him, you know, because if you've listened to the other two episodes, you know that Troma did put out the first feature that I did way back in the late 90s. And knowing Lloyd as a person versus Lloyd as the persona, who you were talking about as the shameless person, is that's very much a character. It's something that he puts on. And that's what's interesting to watch on one level for me. And that's what's interesting to watch on one level for me when I watch Terra Firma, is because I see him sort of taking swipes at his own persona in some ways. And this sort of goes on to the idea of the blindness of the character, in that having him be a blind director, I don't know, I kind of saw it as sort of giving the finger to the critics in some way. What do you think about the blindness?
Yeah, of course the blindness gives us ample opportunity for, you know, some good slapstick. The scene in the bathroom, of course, was good. And you've got him constantly, you know, complimenting his lead actress, talking about how beautiful she is. And she buys into it, even though she knows that he's blind, which is kind of weird.
Blind director coming through. Christine, that was great. That was terrific. Now all we have to do are a couple of pickups and we go right home.
Larry, my contract says 15 hours and I've been here 22 hours now. I want to go home.
Well, of course you're going to go home. You know, when we were doing that close-up, Christine, I could have sworn you were Marilyn Monroe in River of No Return. You were so beautiful.
Really, Larry?
Yeah.
Marilyn Monroe?
Yeah.
Well... maybe I could go a couple more times. How do I look?
You look great, Marilyn. I mean, Christine.
I liked that he did that, and I definitely think it was a swipe at the critics for, you know, how can this guy be making these movies? He must be blind or just completely out of touch with things. So, and I wonder, you know, because not only is he blind, but then you've got his daughter on set there too, and she's mute. So I'm wondering if he was kind of pushing that a little bit more too.
Yeah, and the reason why she's mute is supposedly her mother was killed in front of her. So it was supposed to be this trauma that happened when Larry Benjamin was promoting a film years before where he appeared on a talk show that got out of hand, which actually, once again, references back to Lloyd's own life when he was promoting Troma's War in the mid-80s and he was on the Morton Downey Jr. show, and Morton Downey Jr. got up in his face and it led to like a fight in the studio. So that's sort of a reference back to his own thing. Getting to the Amazing Grace use, once again, this whole idea of blindness, playing on the idea of blindness. And this also, I see it as to the previous film, when we talk about Romeo and Juliet and the use of the hymn, "We Shall Gather at the River," and that constantly pops up. But the use of Amazing Grace and the key ideas of the song of Amazing Grace, of blindness, of sight, and things like that.
Yeah.
There you go.
Sorry.
But I think it's good that you have like several different versions of Amazing Grace going on in this, because I think it's kind of funny, the various interpretations, because whenever I hear Amazing Grace, and this just has to do with, I guess, maybe going to too many funerals, it's always played on bagpipes. It's very somber. And you have some of the most rockingest renditions of Amazing Grace I've ever heard in this film.
I have to say the soundtrack for this movie is really pretty great. I mean, especially it was great to see the Lunatics again. I hadn't seen them in years and years. And for them to pop up, it was like, oh, nice. Yeah, I forgot about this band. They're pretty darn good. And I guess for me, whenever I hear Amazing Grace played on bagpipes, I always think about them shipping Spock's body off into the Genesis planet.
Also, I understand that there's another connection when it comes to this soundtrack as well for you.
Yeah, you know, our guest co-host Skiz Sizek is actually on the soundtrack as part of the band Berserk, and I think they had at least two songs that were on the soundtrack for this one. So definitely, if you haven't heard the whole Berserk album, highly recommend it. I think I actually picked it up in a bargain bin years and years ago. But yeah, it's a pretty great album.
The other thing with the film that Lloyd does is he uses these various lifts from other places. In the one diner scene where you have Jennifer and Casey, which is Will Keenan and Elise Latourell, are sort of having a date, there's this whole audio clip that sounds a little familiar.
And I guess I'll have the chicken salad sandwich.
Yeah, the whole Seinfeld parody. I enjoyed that. I mean, it reminded me, I don't remember when this movie came out as in comparison to something like Natural Born Killers, but it reminded me a little bit of the way that they had that kind of fake sitcom in the middle of Natural Born Killers, where they're using the laugh track very inappropriately for this very awful situation. And it kind of reminded me of that, because it's like we had, you know, I think they even say in Terra Firma, you know, this scene was shot in front of a live studio audience. And it was cheesy, but fun. And I think that they did a pretty good job with that. And yeah, it was one of those very self reflexive, self-knowing moments where and they did that quite a few times in this film, not just with, you know, Lloyd as the blind director, but like the continuity scene later on in the film. I really actually it was silly, but I enjoyed that a lot.
That's good. And then when you get to close to the ending, you have the aspect of Brian De Palma-esque split scenes, split screens happening.
Yeah, that was something to see. It really kind of took me by surprise that he was going there, but I was like, all right, if you're going to do it, let's do it up.
And he does it, but he does it, of course, in ways that are almost sort of mocking and satirical of Brian De Palma-esque split screens.
Yeah, especially by having the split screen basically separated, you know, the two characters are separated by about a foot and a half, but yet they're in split screen. You know, talking about the split screen thing, I was at that time while I was watching the film, for some reason in my head, I was thinking, yeah, I read that Trey Parker and Matt Stone were in this movie. Where the heck are they? And then all of a sudden I start hearing like these little like sound bites that just they had to be, if not both of those guys, at least Trey Parker, you know, stuff like.
Oh, my God, it's a goofy night. Oh, you got a real night.
And all this kind of stuff. And it's like, OK, there they are. And then they finally they show up at the very end in the PSA. But I was glad to hear those little like silly Cartman-esque sound bits that were going on, especially in that scene. I don't know if they were in other places and I just missed them. I mean, this movie is just chocked full of, you know, you mentioned all the cameos and stuff, but even just looking at some of the people in the crowds, it's like, my gosh, they just had so many people that were on these sets, especially, you know, on the set of the movie set, but then in the party scene and stuff where you've got that amazing, what was his name? The Tedster?
Tedster!
The Toddster, yeah, where you've got the Toddster at that frat party. I mean, there's just a ton of people there. And I was actually able to pick out a couple familiar faces of some of the people in the back, folks who may or may not want to acknowledge that they were in a trauma film, so I won't mention them here. But it was nice to go, oh, hey, I recognize some of these people. So that was good as well. I don't know, did you see Matt and Trey other places, or was it just at the end there?
I think they just shot the PSA bit, and then there is, like you said, a couple of Cartman-esque drops that find their way in.
Yeah, and then I don't know about you, but you know, did you see any similarities between this film and, I don't know how much we want to get into spoiler territory, but did you see any similarities between this one and Beyond the Valley of the Dolls?
Well, without getting into spoiler territory, how do you see it?
I see it in I see it in the reveal of Z-Man Ronnie Barcell as being an ugly broad.
Ah, okay. I get it. Yes. Maybe. I think that might be in the background.
Okay.
And, you know, I wouldn't put it past him because obviously someone like Russ Meyer really informs someone like Lloyd Kaufman in terms of being an independent filmmaker.
Right. I guess what I did like about this one too was the, you know, you talked about all the references to other trauma films, and we're definitely seeing references to other things, Seinfeld and some other movies along the way. But I think my favorite part of this was, and it actually took me a few minutes, was realizing just what bad taste in movies the Will Keenan character has, and just his insistence of, you know, going home and watching these great films to him, and they're just, you know, total trash.
Yeah, like when Will says,
I think I'm going to pack it in early tonight. Picked up Titanic. Really want to see it again for the first time.
Or when they're talking about the Sam Fuller film Shark, which really isn't all that good, but there's also a reference to another shark film.
There's only one movie about a shark, and that is Jaws, Spielberg. And I think that and Hook are probably his best films.
Right, yeah, and just how... I love that whole scene where he's talking about how those pretentious French people are all about bringing back Sam Fuller.
Yeah. Well, you know.
And then they show up.
Yeah. And then Godard, you know, because Godard actually had Sam Fuller in one of his films. So, you know, and really what it's about for me when you watch a movie that is supposed to be on the set, an on the set kind of film, is you get the feeling of sort of a troop movement or sort of a traveling sideshow or something like that. And I know from my own experience when I made a low budget film in the late 90s that although it wasn't as campy and burlesque as Terror Firmer, there is a lot of things that anyone who's ever made a film, if they watch Terror Firmer, they're going to go, yeah, that's happened. Or yeah, there's on-set romance. Or yeah, there's like people that want to have fist fights with each other. Or yeah, there's people playing practical jokes. Or yeah, there's all this stuff. And it's from that aspect, that's part of the reason why I really love what I call making movies. And that's one of the things I want to talk about after the interviews with Lloyd and Will, is sort of, let's pull that out, Mike. You know, like we did with Romeo and Juliet, where we talked about Shakespeare. Let's talk about making movies and sort of which ones we really enjoy and maybe ones that get it right, ones that get it wrong, and all that fun stuff.
All right. Well, I'm going to work on my list about making movies while we play back these interviews that we did with director Lloyd Kaufman and actor Will Keenan.
All right, I'm here with Bill Byforce and Mr. Chris to tell you a little bit about Outside the Cinema.
All right, Reverend Scott, take us to church.
What can we expect to find from a typical show?
2 hours of just random blabber.
Is there anyone's coattails you rode in on to popularity?
I'm the guy that fucking burns the coattails and then pisses on them.
You review all these exploitation, horror, comedy, cult, and often all-around terrible movies. You must have a strong driving force that keeps you going.
Ego.
And I don't know if I've heard you say that before.
Yeah, I've been saying that for a while.
Really?
I have been saying that for a while. Also, I'm high on smack.
Well, it's definitely working for you guys. People are coming out in droves to support you on iTunes.
We just the other day got a one-star review on iTunes.
Well, that is one star too many. Let me tell you, the worst fucking piece of shit I've ever heard.
This has been great, guys.
Thanks, Scott. That was good. Oh, he's got you crying over there.
I'm good for the rest of the year.
Nice.
That was too much.
Excuse me, what are you doing? Are you looking for porn again?
No.
Well, what is that I see?
It's not porn. It's the badassboobsandbodycounts.com website. I happen to be looking at the reviews in the boobs section of the site.
They have a section of the site dedicated to boobs?
Yes, they do. They cover exploitation films in the boobs category, action films in the badass category, and horror in the body counts category.
What's that other option, BBNBC podcast?
If you're not into reading the reviews, you can listen to them via the web on your mobile device through iTunes, and they cover the same types of films, lesser known action, exploitation, and horror cinema. So yeah, to answer your question, I wasn't cruising porn.
That's too bad.
What's too bad?
That you weren't cruising for porn.
Why?
Because I was feeling kind of horny.
Oh, wait, get back here. Hey, get back here.
Everyone wants to spice things up in the bedroom. Here's an offer you won't want to miss. For a limited time, you'll get 50% off just about any one item at AdamandEve.com. Yes, get 50% off when you use the coupon code BOOF at checkout, as in John Wilkes Powers or the Projection Booth. But that's not all. You'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs and free shipping on your entire order. Too good to be true? It's not. Check out AdamandEve.com today for this special offer. Once again, that coupon code is BOOTH at AdamandEve.com.
Everybody's tweeting, fave ain't got no eating. Follow Friday, some of you know. And play Dream Tweet, the game show to go. It's the game show to go. Dream Tweet, everybody. It's the celebrity-based Twitter-themed game show that's coming your way, where two Twitter titans go head-to-head in a battle of wits and wisdom. Tune in, subscribe on iTunes, and there'll be a new game every single week. And remember, if things get a little bit sassy, just try and keep in mind that I'm just being a bitch. That's my catchphrase, and I'll be using it, and we'll be having laughs, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's Dream Tweet, the game show to go, and it's coming soon.
Dream Tweet.
I'm quiet, everybody! Now look, I'm the director. I'm the director. Look, I am the director. Now, I'm not saying that because I'm on an ego trip or for some kind of bullshit artistic vision. I'm telling you this because I've been directing 10-cent movies for 30 years, and I think I know a little bit about what I'm doing. And I also know something about the world because I'm a 52-year-old asshole.
The idea for Terra Firma, how did that come about?
Well, like all of the films that I've had the privilege to make, and I can't speak for the other directors, but I take quite a while to find a subject that burns me up or gets me excited. So it takes a while to. So I started getting interested in trauma and getting a little more interested in the fact that the little director who believes in what he's doing, it doesn't matter that he might not be terribly talented, that the fact that he believes in his art and he's fighting against the system. And so that had a lot to do with Terra Firma. And we just somehow decided that maybe the violent city, the real violence outside in the city, have it intersect with the goofy, rubbery violence of a trauma movie. And you know, the gay thing has been a lot. We've always had sort of a gayish themes, even in the first Toxic Avenger, the ostracized gay guys, a small number of people who support Toxie when the town of Tromaville turns against him are the gay guys. So we, and Killer Condom, of course, and we've always sort of embraced that a bit.
Now, your character in there, Larry Benjamin, how much is he like you and how is he different than you?
I think he's an exaggeration of me. You know, I think you know, you know, there's that a couple of lines where I'm giving everybody a pep talk and about the quality of the film, and then I say something like, "And where are those naked women?" or something, you know, like really crass. That's not I. You know, I'm not that that blatantly crass. But it's a very funny moment in the movie.
I've known you for quite a while, well over a decade. I've known your work quite a while too. And you know, Terra Firma, when I watched it, sort of seems like that may be the place where your tone gets a little darker in the films that go after, and your satire becomes a lot heavier, like you're really pissed off. So I mean,
Romeo's pretty damn dark. Romeo is ends up promoting incest. That's a little bit weird.
Yeah, but this one, it seems like you really wanted to take the axe handle to the Hollywood types and those who maybe didn't understand what you were trying to do. Do you think that's what it was, and sort of how that colors stuff that came after?
I think Terra Firma is more just the little guy, sort of sad little guy who believes in what he's doing, but, you know, just getting stomped on. And then on top of it, is the issue of the violence that's occurring also. You know, while the little guy is making a goofy Toxic Avenger movie, the serial killer is knocking people off with real violence, you know, not silicone violence.
So what was the reaction like when Terra Firma came out?
I can't say I was taken off the field on people's shoulders. Let's put it that way. The New York Times gave it a pretty good review. You know, the smart critics get it, but we can't get into a lot of movie theaters with it. That's for sure. We couldn't. It's a great film, and Woody Allen made a movie called Hollywood Story, Hollywood Ending. Both Terra Firma and Hollywood Ending are about blind directors, and I think they make a great. They were made around the same time, and they make a great double feature. It's really amazing programming for. If some art house played Terra Firma and Hollywood Ending, and actually Hollywood Ending, you know, I think it's a wonderful film. I love it. But I've met so many people who, you know, who like Woody Allen, who are not terribly enthusiastic about Hollywood Ending. I can't imagine why. It's such a good movie. It's really great. And Terra Firma is good too. And they're both around the same time. So they're totally different. But yet they have this blind director around whom the film is built, and it'd be an interesting double feature.
As for the future, what sort of lays out what type of things are you planning to do next?
Well, as for the future, we've put a YouTube video. We shot something on YouTube, which kind of sums up the future. If you go to Lloyd Kaufman Homeless, I think you can dial that in, Lloyd Kaufman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N, and remember Lloyd is L-L-O-Y-D as in David. So you go Lloyd Kaufman and Homeless and plug into YouTube and you'll see the future. And also talks about some of our things like Comcast channel and the stuff we're doing to try to stay around in the future. You know, we have a Comcast channel, so if you get Comcast, you've got the free Troma on Demand channel, and we're putting up movies with YouTube. There's a Troma channel on YouTube in which you can see free movies, and Hulu has free movies from Troma, of course. So we're getting into that area, whether or not, hoping that maybe we can get in there early and build an audience so that somehow we can derive the means to keep making movies through the modern world of iTunes and Xbox and all that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, this summer we'll presumably shoot Class of Nukem High Redux, so we keep making movies. And you know about Father's Day. That's a movie that Astron 6 made, which Troma produced. Michael Herz and I produced it. And it's a really amazing film. Astron 6 is a group that is, I think, up there with Trey Parker and Matt Stone and James Gunn and Eli Roth and people like that who've sort of either been involved with our movies or we've discovered. And they're incredibly talented.
So was there any hesitation, or are you pretty much gung-ho when Terra Firma came along and Lloyd started talking to you about that one?
He contacted me about it and said they were doing Terra Firma and asked me if I would play one of the lead roles, Jerry, the one that Trent Haga plays. And I read the script, and this was a year after Tromeo was released, 1999, I think it was the summer of 99. No, wait, it may have been 98, the summer of 98 that we shot Terra Firma. And I read the script, and I thought to myself, if I'm going to make another Troma movie, I'd like to play, the bad role, the serial killer role, the villainous role. And Lloyd said, but it's supposed to be a girl. And I said, well, why can't we make it a hermaphrodite? And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? And I had taken a women's studies class at NYU. And there was a whole kind of section on hermaphrodites. And I was just kind of enthralled by the plight of the hermaphrodite. And so I kind of pitched it to Lloyd to change the character to a hermaphrodite, and that I would play that. And he thought I was crazy at first, but I guess he talked to Patrick Cassidy and some of the other people and Doug Buck who were writing it, and they kind of went for it. And that was... that was the beginning of it. And on that movie, I had said, not only do I want to change the lead role to a hermaphrodite, but I also want to be one of the producers, and I want to work behind the scenes as much as I can because I really want to learn this. I want to learn how to make, independent films. And he said, okay, fine. And I became the, I think I'm credited as an associate producer, but I definitely did more than normally what, people think associate producers do. And I was the casting director. And I rehearsed all the actors and staged a lot of the action of the scenes, and did as much as I could. So, that was also one of my stipulations. And then finally, when it came down to casting the role I was supposed to play, the Jerry role, I was having a hard time finding the right person. When a Troma movie puts out a casting notice, it's usually in backstage and, they get the word out as much as they can. And, I think on Terra Firma, we probably had, 1,000 people show up. So we had to go through a lot of people to find the right cast. And I just couldn't find someone with the energy that the character of Jerry, you know, seemed to have warranted, you know, someone who was so gung-ho about trauma movies and so forth. But, you know, one day this young guy walks into the office and high energy is just like, I just want to die in a trauma movie. It's my favorite, you know, kind of movie, blah, 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 going on and on and on. And it was Trent Haga. And I said, sure. I said, we'll kill you, but I'd rather you read for the lead role. And his eyes lit up and he's like, wow. So I gave him the sides and he went out and he studied them. And then he came in and he did a great job, you know, in the audition. And then I can remember, you know, showing Lloyd the tape saying, this is my pick for Jerry. What do you think? And he thought I was crazy. He said, he said he looked like a heroin addict. And I said, no, he looks like Steve Buscemi. But you know, I introduced him to Lloyd, and Lloyd got it pretty quickly that this guy is Jerry. I mean, it's like, you know, I think Trent's a good actor, but he also, like, you know, was so close to that character, kind of, you know, that's where his passion is in, you know, horror movies and really interesting cult movies. So that's when Trent Haga was discovered.
That's the thing that's funny is I remember during our time when we were in Cannes in 99 showing Terra Firma and, you know, just hanging out with Trent. He is so much that character because he knows so much about trauma and he knows so much about this stuff that you get the feeling that, you know, how much of the division of that character is really him versus the character.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, no, he's that character's in him. I mean, Trent's obviously, you know, he's a well-rounded guy. He's a really smart guy and he's a family man and, you know, he can, you know, he just wrote a movie for Lifetime that Courtney Cox directed. So he's really, really talented and he's really become quite a writer. He still acts in a lot of, you know, kind of cult movies and low budget movies, but he's really kind of making a name for himself out here as a writer as well.
Your character, you talked about how you wanted to play that darker role within Terra Firma. How did you sort of build it? Do you remember sort of how you were able to get them to sort of tweak it and sort of build this character that obviously is sort of the antithesis in a way to a lot of the stuff that Trauma was about? I mean, your character was a mainstream film lover, especially I remember the line about Titanic in there. And also, as you said, carries a secret. So how are you able to sort of build the Casey character?
Well, I mean, I think they did a really good job in developing it, you know, with the script. And I was, as an actor, I was really interested in kind of showing off, you know, that this character was one way during the day and another way at night. And at the time, I was probably more, at least as far as tastes, you know, I mean, I like some Spielberg movies, you know, I like some commercial movies. I think there are plenty of, you know, formulaic commercial studio movies, as long as the scripts are good and the acting's good, where I'll laugh at the right time, I'll cry at the right time. I love formula movies if they're made well, you know. So I could identify with that. You know, it's, you know, independent filmmaking, especially cult filmmaking, is like theater in a lot of ways. You know, there's lots of bad stuff out there. You know, so it wasn't so hard to get into that character, except, you know, the really sick and twisted, you know, serial killing part that I kind of had to make up as I went along. But it was more about kind of, you know, having fun, but being believable at the same time.
Terra Firma, it always seems to me like it's kind of a lot more cynical than a lot of the films that Lloyd has done, or at least it seems like it was kind of the start of this cynicism. Did you see that in the film or what do you am I completely off base?
I don't know if I'm the right person to you know, say, really. I mean, I hadn't seen any other movies before Tromeo, and then, you know, I worked on Tromeo and then Terra Firma, but I think it being kind of self-referential, maybe some cynicism came out of that, and, you know, maybe he continued to do that with his you know, the movies he made after that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, Lloyd was always kind of, you know, in public rooting for the little guy and, you know, against big corporations and the monopoly of the, you know, the corporate world. So he was always, you know, as far as I can remember, he was always like that. And oftentimes, you know, whatever you're passionate about in your life, you know, you bring to your art. So I think he, you know, and whether it's Poltergeist or even the Toxic Avenger movies, you know, you'll always have those scenes and those, you know, the dialogue where he kind of fights for the little guy.
It was one of the things I was also going to ask. I mean, obviously you worked with him in both capacities on this film, and you had worked with him on Tromeo as well. What do you see as sort of the difference between Lloyd's character in Terra Firma versus Lloyd as an actual director on the set, besides the fact that he's not blind?
I was just going to say, that's the only one. He's not blind. No, I mean, you know, that is Lloyd. Look at that. I think the behind-the-scenes documentary of Terra Firma, I think it's called Farts of Darkness or something. And that is Lloyd, you know. I mean, he's crazier offset. I mean, not crazy as in insane, but just how he makes movies is very, very specific. I've never seen anyone make a movie like Lloyd Kaufman. And, you know, I think it has to do a little bit with the kind of movies he's making. I think you probably have to, if you're making something like a trauma movie where there's so many moving parts that are bloody, and prosthetics and you know, it's almost like a, what's it called? A Rube Goldberg device. Is that the name?
Yes.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's like every movie Lloyd makes is kind of like that in a way. But you know, he's a super nice guy in person, a sweet guy in person, very, you know, giving, very funny. And when he comes on set, he's like, you know, he's a madman. And, you know, I think he kind of has to be to get something like, you know, to actually make a movie like that. You know, I don't think you could have made Terra Firma or Tromeo and Juliet by being the kind of the quiet, don't really deal with people kind of director. You know what I mean? The kind of director who only deals with his cinematographer and his other, you know, key crew members. You know, a trauma movie is, you know, all hands on deck, and Lloyd is involved in every aspect when he's on set. You know, and it has to do with his vision, but it also has to do with, you know, if you don't have that kind of energy and you don't have that kind of control on set, there's so many things that will go wrong. One of the things that never, you know, after the first, I guess, week of Tromeo, never ceased to amaze me is that Lloyd has this incredible sixth sense. You know, and he would tell us things like, don't forget to do this because, you know, this bad thing can happen. And we'd all be like, what are you talking about? That would never happen. You know, it's so far, you know, from reality. Don't worry about it, Lloyd. And inevitably, he would always be right because he's done it so many times. And it's just kind of like, you know, coursing through his veins. He can almost see into the future.
If you were to give somebody that was wanting to be in a trauma film or be involved with the trauma film a piece of advice, what would you tell them to for them to be able to survive their experience?
I don't know if there's anything I could tell them that would make them survive. I think it's innate within a person. I think you have to be a certain kind of person to be able to withstand, you know, the madness of working on a trauma movie. And I'd say, you know, go into it expecting, you know, the worst experience ever. And then hopefully you'll be, you know, pleasantly surprised. I would probably sit, you know, someone down, especially if it was someone I cared and deeply loved, I would probably tell them lots and lots of kind of, you know, what the uninitiated would consider horror stories about working, you know, on a trauma set or a movie set like making a trauma movie. But I don't think anything can really prepare you for making a trauma movie. I really don't. I mean, I thought I had done lots of crazy stuff even before Tromeo, but nothing prepared me for Tromeo. And then, you know, only, it's like, you know, there's only a few of us, like Trent, you know, Trent acted in Terra Firma, and then he, like I did after Tromeo, he took kind of a more involved role in the Toxic Avenger movie they did right after that. So I think the only thing that can prepare you for making a trauma movie is already having made a trauma movie. You know, so it's more of a trial by fire thing.
You talked before about how Tromeo helped you in certain ways. Now, Terra Firma, you did take on more responsibilities and working with the actors and things like that. What do you think you learned from that film specifically that sort of helped you forward?
Well, it was the first real production where I was, let's see, I think I had made that short film, Hoof Boy, before Terra Firma. But so this was the first feature film, real production, where I was doing more than just acting. So again, I think I was, you know, a sponge, and I was involved with, you know, with every department. And it was really, really just about a learning experience for me. And I knew that going into it. It's what I wanted to do. I mean, the thing about a trauma movie is, yes, they'll give people a chance if you've never done wardrobe before, but, you know, they think you can cut it and that's what you want to do. You know, sometimes you'll get your shot. But inevitably, whatever department you work in on a trauma movie, you're an expert afterwards. Because, you know, I still, to this day, and I've been on plenty of film sets, you know, that I've worked on or visited, but it's really hard to find films where people, young people, are working so hard and learning so much all in one movie.
We're back. It was great getting a chance to talk to Lloyd Kaufman and Will Keenan again. And if you hadn't had a chance, go back and check out our other two trauma episodes, of course, the classic, The Toxic Avenger, and the film just before Terra Firma, Romeo and Juliet. Also, if you're interested more on Will Keenan in terms of his career and all kinds of fun stuff and what he's doing now, make sure to check out our episode on, and we have to say this in the right accent, The Ghastly Love of Johnny X. That's right. And you can learn more about Troma, of course. You can pick up the film. You can get Lloyd's books over at our website, projection-booth.com. So, Mike, Terra Firma's got me thinking about these making movies, sir. So, you ready to give the drummer some?
Here comes the drums.
So, as we said, what would be your top five when it comes to making movies, Mr. Mike?
This one is fairly difficult for me to narrow it down to five, because I, like yourself, love movies about making movies. So we have covered a few of them here on the projection booth in the past. I mean, if we're telling folks to go in the archives, there's a few they should definitely check out. The Stuntman was the first episode of the projection booth. That's a movie about making movies. I love that. The Woman Chaser with Patrick Warburton. That's another great one of movies about making movies. And then Raw Talent. I would say you could look at that one as well and say that that's that. But those are just honorable mentions. Those aren't even my top five, Rob. That's how crazy I am when it comes to movies about making movies. So, all right. Number five, I'm going to go with an old favorite. I've actually brought this up on the parody episode that I did with Mike Sullivan a while back. And God Spoke. It's a movie about adapting the greatest book ever sold, the Bible. And we've got our boy Soupy Sales inside of that one. But please don't hold that against it, because this is a great film about filmmakers who are just absolutely clueless, shot in our mockumentary style. So you're hitting all of my, you know, my notes with this one. We're making fun of religion. We're doing a mockumentary, and it's about making a movie.
Hey, wait a minute. You're a Detroit boy. Why are you getting down on old Soup there? Come on.
Sorry. It must have been White Fang that was telling me some bad stories about Soupy. So, number four, Living in Oblivion, the Tom DiCillo film. Love that movie. I've only seen it, I think, once, but it just really sticks with me. Especially, that was one of the first times that I ever saw Peter Dinklage. And ever since that movie, I try to find and watch everything that he's in.
Best line? I'm a dwarf. Even I don't dream of dwarfs.
and the other famous line of, I only did this movie because you told me you could put me in touch with Quentin Tarantino.
And that was before Tarantino was Tarantino.
Yes. Number three is a movie that we will be covering in a few months here on the projection booth. So yet another one. And that is Peeping Tom, a great British thriller, kind of up there with Psycho in a lot of people's minds as far as, thrillers and serial killers back in the day. And just absolutely love that one. Number two, Ed Wood, I think, is one of the greatest love letters to movie making that there is. I mean, talk about, you know, going behind the scenes of a low budget film. I definitely see a lot of similarities between this and some of the sets that I've been on in my time. And just, yeah, it's to me, you know, there's a lot of comedy in the film, but really it's almost heartbreaking at times to see this one, and just to see that whole need, that drive to create something and doing it against all odds. Absolutely terrific. And I don't know what it is, but I love the scene with Vincent D'Onofrio in it, who's being voiced by the guy who did The Brain from Pinky and the Brain. One of the best interpretations. It took two men to do it, to do one of the best interpretations of Orson Welles that I've ever seen.
That's right. Visions are worth fighting for.
And number one is a movie that I hope we can do sometime on the show. It is In a Lonely Place, starring Humphrey Bogart and directed by Nicholas Ray. Totally different from the book. The book is terrific. The movie's terrific. And there's no real movie making going on in the book, but they sure stuck that into the movie. And I think they did it in a really terrific way. So other honorable mentions are things like Blowout, possibly one of my favorite De Palma films of all time, though I will say that I love Body Double, and that's another movie about making movies. Sunset Boulevard, Barton Fink, and The Player. I would have to say all of those. So maybe next time we can do a top 10, but most of the time I have trouble even coming up with five, but not this time. I'm all set with movies about making movies.
That sounds good. As for my top five of making movies, when I was coming up with this list, I wanted to not duplicate you. So there's several that would have been on the list, so I decided to drop those. The only one that you're going to get a duplicate on, because it was so impactful when I saw it when it originally came out, is number five, Ed Wood. It's just Tim Burton's, like you said, film about the low-budget filmmaker that everyone loves, Mr. Edward D. Wood Jr., Johnny Depp. It's just amazing, and it's beautiful. Martin Landau is great. It's Bela Lugosi. It's an amazing film. It's probably, if it's not my favorite Tim Burton film, it's up there. It's probably in the top two or three of the movies that he's ever done. Number four is Boogie Nights. I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson shows us this community around a porn set and the family it's sort of built around it and the struggles and all that stuff. I just absolutely loved Boogie Nights. And that was where I came in with Paul Thomas Anderson. I've been following him ever since. And I'm not ashamed to admit that if I had to pick one living American director, I may pick him right now as the guy doing the most interesting work at this point. Number three, The Artist, the recent quote-unquote silent film. That one's really interesting because it's a look at sort of what happens when sound comes in. And this guy who's got this sort of Valentino good looks, and his voice really isn't there. So the question is, how do you survive? And there's all this stuff on the set. John Goodman has a nice part in there. He does a really nice job with it. Number two, Contempt. Yeah, that's right. I had to get even more arty. Godard's 1963 classic, Jack Palance and Fritz Lang, all in the same frame. What more could you want? I mean, come on. It's beautiful. And then number one is a number. That's right. 8.5, Fellini's film about trying to make a film, being blocked and dealing with all the crazy women in your life with Marcello and all the wonderfulness of 8.5. It's just a brilliant piece of filmmaking. And I think it's probably one of the best, if not the best, film about trying to just make movies and the psychology of trying to be creative at the same time. Other films in the honorable mention category, as you said, if we did a top 10, these would definitely be in there. Day for Night, Truffaut's Day for Night, Gods and Monsters. I don't know if you're familiar with Gods and Monsters. It was Bill Condon's film with Ian McKellen pre-Gandalf as James Whale, talking to a Brendan Fraser who's not all wegged out like he usually is in every film in that era in the late 90s. He's actually, I can actually deal with this Brendan Fraser. And he's awesome as James Whale. And there are these flashback scenes in there where Ian McKellen as James Whale is directing Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein. It's just brilliant. Sullivan's Travels, Preston Sturges. That's a great one. Of course, that's where you get the phrase, "Oh, brother, where art thou?" which the Coen brothers, you know, your Barton Fink selection. Adaptation, I love adaptation in many ways. Charlie Kaufman is a genius in this in terms of his writing, and, you know, Nicolas Cage playing a double role and all this sort of weirdness around trying to have writer's block and write a film and all that. I just thought was brilliant. Hugo, Martin Scorsese's recent film, I thought that was good in terms of its ode to the silent era. And specifically one filmmaker, and I'm not going to give that away for you if you haven't seen it yet, so make sure you go see that. Hollywood Shuffle, another one on filmmaking from the great Robert Townsend, who I would love to do an episode on Hollywood Shuffle. So if anyone knows how to
get that's a great movie.
Yeah, if anyone can get a hold of Robert Townsend for me, please let me know, because I would love to talk to him about that very important independent film. And probably one that's kind of overlooked because when it came out, it didn't get much respect, but it's instantly quotable, and I think both Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy are so good in it, is Bowfinger. I thought Bowfinger was so much fun when I saw it.
Yeah, Bowfinger is great, and you're right, it was completely overlooked, and it's like, even going back now and watching scenes of it, you know, if it's on cable or whatever, it's like, wow, this movie really holds up. It definitely, it's probably one of the best things that Eddie Murphy ever did, and definitely in this kind of nadir of his career, it's one of the best things that I've seen him do.
Yeah, and I don't think people knew how to relate to it when it came out, and there's stuff in there that's great about, just Terrence Stamp is hilarious in Bowfinger as the guy from Mindhead, a sort of Scientology-esque group that Eddie Murphy's character belongs to, and my friends and I often quote, "Keep it together. That's my name.
K-I-T.
K-I-T.
Keep it together.
That's my name, Kit." That might be one to put on the list to maybe do.
Yeah.
This is just so underappreciated.
Somebody get me Steve Martin on the phone now.
There you go. Steve Martin, I know you're out there. I know you listen, and we'd love to talk to you about Bowfinger. So as for Terra Firma, Mr. Mike, anything left to say?
I don't think so. You know, I will say again that this was another great role from Will Keenan, and you know, I really enjoyed him in Terra Firma, and in this one he kept it up, man. He's a really great guy to watch, and I appreciated where he was going with this role.
And that's the thing that's great, is I think if you go back, and as we were talking about previous episodes, of course, listen to the other Troma episodes if you haven't, Toxic Avenger and Tromeo and Juliet. But I would say also, if it's on the festival circuit and it's coming near you, take in Ghastly Love of Johnny X. I mean, you see Will in a completely different light in terms of what he does. He's just phenomenal at that, and he's great as Tromeo in his first feature, and the man's doing excellent work. So definitely keep up with Will, and we'll have some links on our website as to where you can get more information on him. And as for Lloyd, he's still up to his old hijinks. We talked to him previous, and I don't know if you remember or not, but he said that the Class of Nukem High, the return to Class of Nukem High, I believe is what it might be called, they're just now wrapping up on a trailer for it. So they did shoot this summer, and it looks like they're probably within, I would suspect that by the end of the winter, early 2013, that we will have a new piece of cinema from great and I think underappreciated Lloyd Kaufman. But then again, he's a good friend of mine, and I'm a little biased.
Somebody give me Lloyd Kaufman on the phone.
That's easy.
All right. We'll have to talk to him when Class of Nukem High Redux comes out.
And there is a duck in it.
Nice. Yes, I contributed to the Kickstarter campaign all about that duck.
There you go.
All right. We're going to take a break and play a preview from next week's show.
Testing, 1, 2, 3, 4.
He said that I was the most melancholy Dane that he had ever directed. Look, I am not your thinking caddy anymore.
But you were my mother's piano. That fucking museum is not going to get you. Shit. See, then the debates came along. And everybody said that I was like Cicero. They said the colored found that out when it was too late, that it was the North, not the South. Oh, yeah. Yes, Whitaker. You have been what? Can you... Mother. Mother. Stay.
right in. Step right in. Meet real men and wishes and heart's desire on the inside. Mother. Mother!
All right, that was sort of a preview, because I don't think there really is a preview for this film. It's called Secret Honor. Come back next week. We'll be talking about director Robert Altman's 1984 one-man political film looking at Richard Nixon, shot in Ann Arbor on the University of Michigan campus. It stars Philip Baker Hall as the disgraced ex-president. We'll be talking to the co-writer of the film and also the stage play that it came from, Donald Freed.
So I'm thinking maybe next week, Rob, when we talk about Secret Honor, we can do the top five Richard Nixon films. So you might want to put your thinking cap on now, but there are a lot of them out there. So if you've got a Richard Nixon film or a little bit to say about Terra Firma or anything else, come on by the website over at projection-booth.com. Feel free to leave us a comment, some feedback, listen to this episode or any other. Well, I guess you have listened to this episode because now we're at the end.
Director.
Yeah.
Yeah.